It's Monday, January 4th. If at first you don't succeed, threaten the vote counter? We start here. In a last-ditch effort to overturn election results, President Trump leans on a Georgia official, and it's all on tape.
So what are we going to do here, folks? I only need 11,000 votes.
This explosive call happened right as the new Congress was being sworn in, why this week could be a defining moment for American politics. We were promised 20 million Americans would be vaccinated by now.
We stand at 4 million immunizations.
With lives on the line, what the U.S. is getting wrong. And a week after an explosion rocked downtown Nashville, police are still asking why.
He seemed to subscribe to a number of conspiracy theories.
We'll catch you up on that bizarre story and everything else you need to know to start the new year. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Hey, Happy New Year. Hope it's going well for you so far. Last week, we really focused on zooming out, right? Taking stock of where the last year has left us. But while a lot of last week was about digestion, figuratively and literally, there was a flurry of developments, right? As 2020 turned into 2021. So I want to get you caught up, starting right now. And let's begin in the nation's capital. First of all, remember what the Constitution says about Congress. While new presidents get sworn in on January 20th, the big day for Congress comes earlier. They get sworn in on January 3rd, which meant President Trump had to make big decisions on sweeping bills before they expired with the Congress forever.
I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation and to send me a suitable bill, or else the next administration will have to deliver a COVID relief package, and maybe that administration will be me.
Remember President Trump saying he did not like the COVID relief deal? That threw millions of Americans into doubt about whether they would get federal funds to help ease their burden. But just before the new year, Trump caved and signed that deal into law. He did veto a defense spending bill.
The bill on reconsideration is passed, the objections of the President of the United States to the contrary notwithstanding.
But on New Year's Day, Congress convened to override that presidential veto for the first time in the Trump presidency. Now, all this really makes it sound like, wow, President Trump's influence on those congressional Republicans, it's really waned on his way out of office, right? Well, last night, the 116th Congress gave way to the 117th.
Welcome all. As Speaker of the House, it is my great honor to preside over this sacred ritual of renewal.
And again, the first job of Congress is laid out in the Constitution. Their first job is to keep American government running. They have to affirm the next president of the United States. Well, right now, President Trump is actively trying to get this Congress to ignore the election results, and he's leaning on officials to help in any way they can.
Hello, Brad and Ryan and everybody. We appreciate the time and the call.
Which brings us to last night, when the Washington Post and then ABC News obtained audio of a call between President Trump and Georgia's Secretary of State. This is the story that is about to drive much of this week in Washington. So let's take you there right now. ABC's political director Rick Klein is with us, along with ABC's lead congressional producer Trish Turner. Rick, can you just walk us through this recording?
This is a wild phone call. For more than an hour on Saturday, this was President Trump and top aides and administration officials on the phone with the Secretary of State of Georgia and an attorney in his office.
Look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more that we have.
Trying to cajole, threaten, sweet talk into finding more votes. His words.
So what are we going to do here, folks? I only need 11,000 votes. Fellas, I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break. Now, do you think it's possible that they shredded ballots in Fulton County? Because that's what the rumor is. And also that Dominion took out machines.
He lays through a whole series of debunked conspiracy theories, many of which have been dismissed in court.
Do you know anything about that? Because that's illegal.
No, Ryan Germany. No, Dominion is not moved any machinery out of Fulton County. We're having
have they moved the inner parts of the machines and replaced them with other parts?
No.
You sure, Brian?
I'm sure.
You should want to have an accurate election. And you're a Republican.
We believe that we do have an accurate election.
Step by step, you hear the Secretary of State of Georgia, a loyal Republican whom the president has been close to in the past, say, no, your facts are wrong. That can't happen. That cannot happen.
And even if you cut them in half again, it's more votes than we need.
Well, Mr. President, the challenge that you have is the data you have is wrong.
Point by point, he is refuted. President Trump does not appear to give up.
And if you would be respected, if really respected, if this thing could be straightened out before the election. You have a big election coming up on Tuesday.
He wants at this stage the Secretary of State of Georgia to say, you know what, never mind the fact that we certified the election results, never mind that the electors have already cast their ballots and we've all sworn and all the courts have tossed out the challenges. We think there's a problem here.
The ballots are corrupt and you're going to find that they are, which is totally illegal. It's more illegal for you than it is for them because you know what they did and you're not reporting it. That's a criminal offense. And you know, you can't let that happen. That's a big risk to you and to Ryan.
He wants to create just enough doubt to allow an alternate slate of electors to be introduced by Republicans when Congress convenes to accept those electoral college votes on Wednesday. It's an extraordinary ask, and there's really no indication all along that that Republican officials in Georgia would go along with this. They've been quite clear. They think the president and his allies are listening to misinformation and worse, but they're asking at this late stage to basically toss out the votes of Georgians.
Wait, Trish, I thought the election was over, right? Like, what actually happens this week when Congress gets together? Like, walk me through it.
Well, this is normally a ceremonial process. We've seen many of them play out over the years. There has been acrimony in past years, to be sure. But I don't think it's going to be anything like what we're in for, this coming Wednesday. So normally Congress meets by law at 1 o'clock on January 6th. There's a joint session. And basically, Brad, it's just to reaffirm the Electoral College vote that we already know, certified it for Biden this year, and that's supposed to be what happens.
Overnight, Vice President Mike Pence signaling he supports an effort from about a dozen senators and 140 House Republicans to reject the will of the voters.
This year instead, the presiding officer, it's already going to be awkward enough, will be Mike Pence, asks those, the lawmakers before him, are there any objections?
We ought to have a fair inquiry, a fair audit into these results, and we ought to resolve these claims, not just dismiss them out of hand.
We know that this year that 140 House Republicans, about a dozen senators, Republican senators, are going to object.
The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Hastings, will present his objection.
Well, and that's what seems different here, right? Because I remember in 2000, Trish, Al Gore, even more awkward, had to preside over his own defeat. You had some House Democrats saying, no, this is no fair. But no senators would go along with it, right? And that seems key. Here, like, there seem to be several senators.
That's exactly right. So there's a dozen who've already told us that they plan to object. And, in 2000, it was over one state, Florida.
I must object because of the overwhelming evidence of official misconduct. Deliberate fraud and an attempt
to suppress
voter turnout.
The chair must remind members that under
Section
18...
And no Democrat would sign on, and they said at the time, look, this is a futile effort.
And at the end of it, when I talk to my Democratic colleagues, and they say to me, why are you raising it to this level? My comment back to them is, are we going to work on these issues in the days ahead, or are you going to tell me those were normal election issues, move on?
Bottom line, though, the House is controlled by Democrats. They're never going to get a majority to vote to overturn this election in any shape or form.
The Senate, though, is there a chance that if President Trump got enough senators that the Senate would flip this election somehow for him?
No, I don't think so at all. There's a reason, we've reported that Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, he has warned his members against doing this because it is an incredibly politically perilous vote to go up against Trump. But they will do it. I've talked to at least 10 Republicans, probably more, who've said they're just not going to do that. That's their constitutional duty is to show up and affirm what happened in the states. It's not their responsibility to decide the outcome of this election.
So, Rick, does it matter if this isn't going to get the votes? This all still means Joe Biden becomes president later this month, right?
Yes, Joe Biden is going to be president January 20th, regardless of any of the action this week. But what happens, Brad, is this becomes almost a pure referendum on Trumpism. Are you with President Trump? Or are you with all of the evidence, with your constitutional responsibilities? The president is continuing to maintain that there are serious irregularities in this election. He has no evidence to back that up. No court has backed that up, and no state has backed up his outrageous, outlandish charges. But you still have a base of supporters who believe that.
You know, the people of Georgia know that this was a scam. And because of what you've done to the president, a lot of people aren't going out to vote. And a lot of Republicans are going to vote negative because they hate what you did to the president.
And the head-to-head happening even today, Joe Biden and President Trump both in the state, the stakes literally could not be higher. In control of the entire Senate at stake here in Georgia, an unprecedented double-barreled showdown. And again, Trump is the main issue that's on the ballot so far as Republicans go.
Yeah, it's really incredible because when you consider that the this effort to object, we know one of the states will be Georgia.
What I need y'all to do is to get out and vote. It's so important. If we vote, we will win. We will save America.
At the same time that Republicans are actually trying to turn out their own voters, it's really incredible, especially what Rick said. The entire control of the Senate depends on the outcome of those two races. Democrats need to win both to control the chamber.
And I think all of that, the stakes of that, I think, become clear when you look at that phone call from over the weekend. Because what the president's asking here is not an honest accounting of the election. He's asking the Secretary of State to go find some votes for him to win.
You just say you stick by. I mean, I've been watching you for, you know, you don't care about anything. Your numbers are right. But your numbers aren't right. They're really wrong. And they're really wrong, Brad. And I know this phone call is going nowhere other than ultimately, you know. Look, ultimately, I win, okay? Because you guys are so wrong, and you've treated...
He's asking Republican officials to overturn the will of the people, overturn the will as expressed through the Electoral College, even at this late, late hour. And that, to me, is just a pure up-or-down vote on Trumpism.
Yeah, and in fact, the stakes so high that in this morning's Washington Post, you have an opinion column from 10 former defense secretaries. In fact, that is all the living former defense secretaries there are in this country. And all of them, including the ones that worked under President Trump, saying that essentially this is dangerous to keep this effort going on, that for the security of the country, these efforts from President Trump have to stop right now. And Republicans should not go along with him. Rick Klein, Trish Turner, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Brad.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, at this rate, you could still be waiting for your vaccine next year. We're back after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor, you know the type, like I've had this person before, that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Okay, so we talked about Washington. Let's get you caught up on how the rest of the country has been faring in the fight against COVID-19.
To put it bluntly, this has been a grim start to the new year. The TSA has screened 15 million travelers this holiday season. We're learning about more and more New Year's Eve parties with super spreader potential. And now the fear from health experts is we are fanning the flames of what's becoming an inferno.
First of all, the pandemic has gotten decidedly worse. In mid-December, the American death toll was crossing 300,000. Well, this weekend, barely 2 weeks later, we have quickly passed 350,000. We're now at the point where 1 out of 1,000 Americans has died, meaning your town of 20,000 people, 20 people have likely died from COVID. You can tell the numbers won't get better anytime soon because for more than a month now, the number of American COVID patients in hospitals has stayed over 100,000 a day. President Trump has said he thinks these numbers are inflated. Dr. Anthony Fauci essentially told us yesterday, you wish. Heck, we all wish.
It's just terrible. I mean, it is. I mean, there's no running away from the numbers, Martha. It's something that we absolutely got to grasp and get our arms around and turn that inflection down.
An hour or so ago, we were informed that this new variant, this new strain, has been identified here in the state of California.
In Colorado, officials revealing more details about the country's first confirmed case.
And right before the new year, that new COVID variant, the one that appears even more contagious, was found here in America in multiple states. Now, 2021 is expected to be better, not because we've learned really how to stop spreading this among ourselves, but at least because of this.
This is my first time of taking any vaccine, and I feel great with it, and I thank God the Lord provided for this.
Vaccines are now being approved at a quickening pace. In fact, yesterday, the Indian government approved the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is big because this one is way, way, way cheaper than the others. So for many communities in India and elsewhere, that is the difference between life and death. That is, if you actually get the vaccine to the people that need it. We moved heaven and earth to create these shots, but the simple act of delivering them, forget developing countries, that has become a problem here in America. Let's go to ABC's Ann Flaherty, who's been reporting this every step of the way. Ann, we were told by the Trump administration what 20 million Americans would be immunized by the end of the year. Where do we stand?
So we stand at 4 million immunizations have been tracked by the federal government, Brad. It is falling well below what we were hoping by the end of the year. And I think the way to think of this really is that it's moving slow, but it hasn't failed yet. I think the next 2 weeks are going to be very, very telling.
Four states have still not yet vaccinated 0.5% of their populations.
The reason why I think it's so much lower, two reasons. One, we're very bad at tracking.
You know, the Pfizer vaccine came out 1 week before the Moderna vaccine. Essentially, it's been just 12 days. There's two holidays. There's been three major snowstorms.
So all of the states go out, they give their vaccinations, and then they've got to report back to the federal government. So there's a chance that that 4 million number might be closer to, you know, 6 million in reality, but it just hasn't been tracked by the federal government.
Which is still not great.
Right. I mean, even if it's you know, short, it's still too short no matter what. So, you know, I think the other thing, though, to look at this is that this is a very careful distribution effort by most of the states. Most of them are looking at giving it to healthcare workers and hospitals, and they've got to figure out, you know, we don't want to vaccinate the entire ER staff in one day because what if everybody has a reaction? We've got to prioritize these people over these people. This is probably the hardest part of the vaccination deployment. This is the most careful that we're going to be. We're not just throwing it into pharmacies and letting people go at it.
The line at Florida's Flagler County Fairgrounds forming at 5 a.m., 5 hours before opening. The same scene playing out in Houston. The health department's registration phone line crashing, offering 750 doses. They got 250,000 phone calls.
Well, and so the group 1A is defined by the CDC. That's supposed to be healthcare workers and people in nursing homes, whether that's the residents or whether that's the people that work in nursing homes. That's one A. One B is the essential workers we always talk about, so many professions, but also just anyone over the age of 75, like anyone. And so Houston this weekend basically said, hey, if you're in 1B, like call us up. We are ready to like start this vaccination process. Well, they got swamped. And we've seen cities now start to have a problem with like the wider population. So I guess I'm wondering if you're talking about looking at the next few weeks as our big indicator, what exactly needs to go right or what could go wrong? Like, what are you looking at?
Yeah, so there's two things that I'm looking for in the next couple of weeks to see how this is going. One is the rollout to the nursing homes. I mean, that was the one that got started late. And we've talked about this, Brad, where, you know, the nursing homes had to pair up with CVS and Walgreens to get the vaccinations to their homes. They have to calculate how many doses and, you know, can be allowed in each home before they move on to the next nursing home. It's actually a big logistical feat to get this out to the nursing homes. If they can do that, you're going to start to see the numbers accelerate dramatically.
In the race to find a vaccine, the U.S. government announcing a $1 billion investment in pharma giant Johnson & Johnson. That's for 100 million doses.
The next thing that I think everybody should have eyes on is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So, you know, this has kind of flown under the radar. With all the talk of everything else, you know, Moderna was easier to handle than the Pfizer vaccine. That was the second
that
vaccine
can just go in a refrigerator, not the ultra cold freeze tank.
Right. But so imagine a vaccine that can just go in the refrigerator, but also only requires one shot.
Oh.
So the U.S. government has the ability to buy 100 million doses from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I would expect in the next couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, we're going to hear from Johnson & Johnson about how its clinical trial is going. If that shows to be highly effective and it's a one-shot vaccine that can be stored, you know, in your refrigerator, I think that this is going to be a bit of a game changer when it comes to getting this vaccine out to people.
But so you talk about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That only requires one shot. Fantastic. But right now we're with the two-shot system. So can I ask you a question? Say your hospital gets like 200 doses of a vaccine right now. And you think, great, we're going to vaccinate 200 people. Except then you remember, oh, shoot, every person actually needs two doses. But like Pfizer and Moderna, they're shipping out new doses every day. So you're hoping like to get your other shipments. Here's my question for you. Do you give that first dose to 200 people, Anne? You're like, we just got to help everyone we can and hope that that second shipment gets there in time. Or do you just give that first dose to 100 people and just leave those extra vials sitting there unused as more and more people die around us?
So, Brad, I think you've hit on a really, really big question that they're going to be debating this week. You know, we saw in the UK that they're moving in this direction of putting out the vaccine to the broader population and then just kind of hoping that the production line is right behind. That's a risk.
Giving half the dose to people between the age of 18 and 55, two doses, half the dose. We know it induces identical immune response.
An idea Operation Warp Speed is working on with Moderna and the FDA.
Of course, ultimately, it will be an FDA decision.
I think that states and counties can make their own decisions on this to some degree, but I would actually be surprised if you see that as the strategy or the tactic that rules out nationwide. I think it is a little bit risky, but I don't think it's out of the question. I think it's something that they'll be talking about this week.
Yeah, when these booster shots are the thing that actually make you 90-95% immune to the coronavirus, the ethical question is, do you make sure people get those doses as they should, or do you just start hoping and praying that we can get this distribution right on time? Anne Flaherty, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
There's one other story that might have absolutely flown over your head last week that we need to talk about, because right now in Nashville, Tennessee, a large chunk of a full city block has been rendered uninhabitable.
Oh my God, I think it's an explosion. Ralph, watch out! Oh my God, sir, my entire building just fell down and it's collapsing.
Water started coming down on top of me. There was glass everywhere.
This was apparently the work of a man blowing up a van along with himself on Christmas morning. And as investigators started to lay out what they knew about him, it prompted disturbing questions about how this man was able to obtain enough explosives to carry this out. Let's go to ABC senior investigative reporter Aaron Katursky, because Aaron, the only person killed here was the alleged perpetrator, but let's call it what it is, right? This was a massive bombing in an American city, right? How did it happen?
This was an elaborate suicide staged by a man named Anthony Quinn Warner, who was 63 years old, and authorities have said they may never truly know why he actually did it, but it was certainly scary, and it shook Nashville to its core. right on Christmas morning.
911, what is the address of your emergency?
There was a call at about 5 o'clock in the morning for shots fired. That was how police ended up noticing the RV, parked right in front of an AT&T building, and immediately they were suspicious.
That's so weird. That's like something out of a movie.
Like The Purge?
Yeah.
They heard a message warning people to stay away because the vehicle was about to explode, and there was this 15-minute countdown.
You can hear this message. Evacuate now.
There were six officers from the Nashville Metropolitan Police Department on scene.
As long as they don't go to the 2nd Avenue side, should be okay.
And as soon as they heard that warning, they started to move anybody who happened to be around out of harm's way. The damage was significant to property.
Officials say it was felt for miles. Aerial footage showing what looks like a war zone.
When you're looking at all this destruction, it's also kind of amazing that nobody was killed.
The mayor said 41 separate structures in downtown Nashville were materially damaged.
This morning's attack on our community was intended to create chaos and fear in this season of peace and hope.
Well, and we've at this point, Aaron, learned more about this guy's background, right? And his planning, his kind of bizarre belief structure. Like, how did that play into this?
Yeah, Brad, right away, the police said they were confident there was no ongoing threat.
We know of no other imminent danger to the city at this point.
And at first, they didn't quite disclose how they knew that, but they were able to trace the RV to Anthony Warner.
Authorities here in Nashville said that Anthony Warner's father once worked at AT&T, and investigators have been looking into whether that has any connection to the Christmas morning explosion.
And it turns out that Warner has a fairly innocuous past. I mean, he worked as an IT guy for a number of buildings and businesses in and around Nashville. But what authorities came to learn about him is that he seemed to subscribe to a number of conspiracy theories and paranoias about 5G cellular technology, about alien life forms, and about lizard people, of all things, this belief that there are reptilian-type creatures who are going to take over the world. And now, whether any of that played into why he did what he did, police aren't sure, but he is certainly someone who seems to have subscribed to a number of these different paranoias.
Documents obtained by ABC News show police were warned about him. In August 2019, Warner's then-girlfriend told officers Warner was building bombs in the RV trailer at his residence.
And a neighbor telling ABC News just last week, Warner said Nashville and the world, quote, is never going to forget me.
Well, so then what I'm wondering is, like, this guy sounds like very, like, a one-off person, and it sounds like police are saying he's the only one who plotted this particular attack. Do they consider this over, or are there more lasting concerns here about, like, how this guy is able to fill up his van with that many explosives?
Well, that's one concern, certainly, is how he obtained all this stuff and the knowledge to put it together into a workable device. It may not have been the most perfect device, but it certainly did plenty of damage in downtown Nashville and did the job that Anthony Warner may have intended. And that's one of the other nagging questions is, what were his intentions? Did his paranoia over 5G cellular technology mean that he purposefully parked in front of the AT&T building? He apparently had sent to acquaintances different writings. The FBI is aware of that, and they'd like any of those people who were sent some of these writings from Anthony Warner to come forward and turn them over so they can try to develop a picture of who he was and why he would do something like this. Because if he had more sinister intent, Brad, with all those explosives, this could have turned out much differently.
Right, and as off the wall and as unfounded as some of these theories are, he's not the only one who believes in them, right? Like, there are small communities of people who are like-minded. However, he's the only one who's really taken it to this kind of a violent level. We'll see what authorities track down in the days to come. Aaron Kutursky, thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
And one last thing. While airlines and concert venues have received government funds to help keep them afloat, one industry that hasn't gotten as much attention are the performers who make their money going on stage every night. Broadway went dark back in March, and many theaters across America have not hosted live performances since. Well, this weekend, help came in the form of a rat.
Remy the Ratatouille, the rat of all my dreams.
This hour-long streaming musical started off as a small effort with a Disney-loving teacher asking people, if you could make the Disney film Ratatouille into a musical, what songs would you put in it?
This is my submission for the Ratatouille musical. It's sung by Skinner when he finds out that Remy has been the chef the whole time.
Well, that led to a dozen songwriters creating original songs.
Anyone can cook. Bon appetit.
Beyond the new a la French countryside, my name is Remy.
And a cast that eventually included Titus Burgess, Adam Lambert, and Wayne Brady.
Trash is on nature, it's all that we want.
Ratatouille the Musical was presented by TikTok this weekend with a price tag of $5 to watch it. Actors performed from home, some with AirPods sticking out of their ears. An orchestra of 20 out-of-work musicians added sound. And using some TikTok tricks, individual dancers suddenly became full chorus lines. By opening night, it had raised $1 million for the Actors Fund. But just like the pandemic has pushed offices 10 years into the future, some theater critics have pointed out this is not that far off from a standard Broadway musical. This one was just crowdsourced. So could we see more musicals like this even when the marquees are all lit up again? Meanwhile, Ratatouille is still available to stream through tonight. Closing night, you know, it always comes so early. I should say, by the way, Disney is the parent company of ABC. This was not a Disney production, though. These people just went off and did their thing. In the meantime, coolest part of the whole project, I thought, was the chef who got to sing the song that he wrote himself. All right, we are back in it. 2021, we have begun. Let's see how this year goes. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.